Welcome to today's first group call. Today I'm pleased to present Jeff Carr, Finance Director. Please begin your meeting.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the first group pre-close trading update. My name is Jeff Carr, Group Finance Director, and here with me today is Rachel Borthwick, our Corporate Communications Director. Overall, the group remains on course to achieve our stated objectives for the year: moderate earnings growth, cash generation of £180 million, excluding proceeds from business disposals, and importantly, reducing our leverage from 3 times net debt to EBITDA at the end of March 2010 to 2.5 times end of March 2011. That said, we have brought the update forward a little from the normal timing due to disappointing trading, particularly in February, at our North American school bus division. We'll get into the trading issues later in the call. However, the continued pressure on our student margins mean we're now expecting full-year operating margins to be around 8%, with the shortfall in student EBIT being offset at the group level by stronger-than-expected performance in our UK Rail division. As we've emphasised before, one of the key strengths of the group is the diversity of the portfolio, and it's clear that our businesses are moving through the economic cycle at different speeds. Top-line growth in rail and positive recent trends at Greyhound are encouraging, while passenger volumes at UK Bus remain stable, but with little evidence of growth. However, it's clear that US state finances, and specifically school board budgets, are lagging the cycle, and we anticipate the school transportation market will remain challenging in the coming year. So moving on to UK Bus, it's been a continued steady performance for our bus division throughout the year, with full-year like-for-like passenger revenues expected to be up 1.4%, and excellent operating margin improvement developing in line with our expectations. Giles Fernley joined us last month as Bus Managing Director, and I'm sure that the experience he brings will be of great benefit as we continue to develop the business through improved processes, increased efficiencies, and enhancing the service offering to our customers and stakeholders. We've talked previously about the comprehensive spending review, and as we previously stated, we believe we'll be able to offset the impact of BSOL reductions from April next year through mitigating actions including increased efficiencies. We continue to progress in negotiations with local authorities in England on concessionary fare reimbursement, and overall we do not expect a significant impact on our business in this area. In April, we will see the provisional findings of the Competition Commission review on the UK bus industry, and while there will undoubtedly be a period of robust debate on remedies before the final report, which is due to be issued at the end of this year, we believe the industry has successfully demonstrated that it does not make excess profits nor act anti-competitively. I'm pleased with the strong performance from our UK Rail division. Operating profits are now expected to be ahead of previous estimates, and this has largely been driven by stronger top-line growth. Quarter four, like-for-like passenger revenues expected to grow by 6.7%, and we anticipate full-year growth of 5.1%. We now expect our UK Rail operating margin to be ahead of last year, despite the increased premiums on First Great Western and Capital Connect. We're encouraged by the government's continued investment in the rail industry, which will deliver capacity and service improvements to passengers. And as the largest rail operator in the UK, we continue to take an active role in discussions on franchise reform and in bidding for new contracts as the new franchising process moves on. As I stated in the introduction, our trading performance at First Student has been disappointing in the fourth quarter, particularly in February. Difficult weather conditions across the USA, but particularly in the Northeast, have exacerbated the situation, and as a consequence, we now expect operating margins of around 8% for the full year. The root cause of the issues at Student remain the budgetary pressure school boards face, and recent statements from states such as New York, Texas, California, and Illinois demonstrate that these pressures are likely to continue into the new financial year. In New York, for example, Governor Cuomo has just proposed a 7.3% cut to state education aid for the coming budget year, and this is on top of the reductions that we saw this year. In January, and more markedly in February, we saw an adverse impact on our labour efficiency, which resulted in higher than expected labour costs. This has principally been caused by network consolidations and route cuts put through in the preceding quarter. Across the state, we continue to see evidence of customers taking action to bring their overall transportation costs down, whether it be a significant reconfiguration of a network, such as we've seen in Los Angeles, or changes to other services, such as the trend to move kindergarten children to regular existing buses, with the loss of the special midday routes. The resulting changes and route reductions have created labor inefficiencies, which we are working to mitigate. We continue to work to address the challenges facing the school bus market and believe that there's significant opportunity to improve efficiency and reduce costs in order to mitigate the pressures of the current environment. While it's still early in the new bidding season, our retention strategy is showing encouraging results for next year. However, with limited pricing opportunities, we anticipate pressure on margins will continue into the new financial year. Our transit business continues to perform in line with expectations. Full year revenues are expected to be up 2.4%, albeit with a slower growth rate in the second half of the year, principally due to our decision to exit a low-margin services contract in Spain. Underlying growth in shuttle, paratransit and fixed route remains encouraging. At Greyhound, we've been encouraged by an improvement in revenue trends in the fourth quarter. For the full year, like-for-like revenue is expected to be up around 0.6%, but importantly, quarter four is expected to be up by just under 1%. This is a significant improvement compared to the 2.5% decline we saw in quarter three. Although it's early in the cycle, some of the improvement seems to be related to the impact of higher fares from regional airlines and the effect of higher fuel costs for motorists. Additionally, early results from Greyhound Express are encouraging, and we continue to expand our Bolt network in the Northeast. Overall, the change in mix with lower total US profits means our effective tax rate will be slightly lower than the 25% we previously guided to. Looking ahead, we're encouraged by improving trends in UK Rail and Greyhound and the steady performance in our UK bus and transit operations. However, as we just explained, we do expect to continue to see pressure on margins in our student business in the new financial year. Building on the strong cash performance this year, we continue to focus and prioritise cash generation to support our policy of reducing debt and dividend growth. Thank you. Now I'll hand back to the operator and we'll take questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. Our first question comes from Jeff Van Claveren of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jeff. It's Jeff. Just, I suppose, starting with student then. If you strip out the weather issues in Q4, what would the margin have been for the full year in student, just to try and understand what is sort of one-off and what isn't? Secondly, just wanted to know if you've added fuel hedging since the H1 update in November. And thirdly, can you give us an idea of what increase in rail premium you're expecting to pay in 11-12?
Yeah, I think weather has certainly contributed to the disappointing results, and it's not necessarily always that easy to identify specifically the cost of weather. Certainly, we incur higher labour costs, higher engineering costs, and fuel costs when weather is more difficult. But just stripping out the lost days of revenue due to school closures and identifying that on its own above and beyond what we consider to be the normal trend, that accounts for about 50 basis points or half a percentage point of margin decline. So that was for students. That's particularly specific. was in mostly January and February. In terms of fuel hedging, we have added a little bit to next year. I'm trying to look to see what the exact percentages are, but I think it's gone up about 3 or 4% in terms of the level of cover that we're currently at. I'll come back to you with the exact percentages, but it's certainly up a little bit, and we've certainly been adding to the year 2012-13 as well. In terms of the rail premium, the rail premium continues to go up, and as you've seen this year, we've done a very good job of offsetting that premium, and we'll be able to show the net of premium, net of subsidy, went up, as we discussed before, around 100 million this year. It goes up a little bit more than that next year, around about 140 million. Now, obviously, some of that will be offset by revenue support. But as I said, we've been able to offset the 100 million this year in rail, and we've been able to show margin improvement. I don't think we'll show margin improvement next year, but I think we've been able to demonstrate that that's a strong business, and we project it will continue to do well off the back of a good year this year.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Our next question comes from Edward Stanford of Oriel Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Jeff and Rachel. Just two questions, please. First of all, perhaps just focusing on rail. Clearly, done very well this year. I'm just trying to understand the mechanics of this and how the success is due, given the fact you've got two of your largest franchises in revenue support. You know, where has the operational gearing come from, and where have the benefits come from? Perhaps you give us a flavour of that. And secondly, on UK bus, have you seen any evidence, as you begin to see in Greyhound, of people shifting towards bus travel and indeed perhaps rail travel because of the petrol prices?
In terms of rail, the leverage really is coming from principally the top line. And yes, although First Great Western, First Capital Connect are in revenue support, we do see a little bit feeding through to the bottom line in both of those franchises. And obviously in the other two franchises, it's a more direct correlation. And the growth in rail has really not been specifically focused in any one particular operating company. It's been spread across the talks. So it hasn't been something we've identified with as a London trend. We've seen strong growth in TransPennine Express and also ScotRail. So it's been principally driven by top line improvements, although we continue to do, I believe, a very good job in terms of cost management in our rail division, and that's really been what's driving. But the key outperformance has been on the top line. In terms of UK bus, no, I think it's we haven't really seen any evidence yet of. Although I do believe that we will see some evidence of movement as people leave their cars at home. We definitely see it, and it's quite a sharp and fast movement in Greyhound. But it's not something that we've observed yet in the UK. I'd say volumes and revenue, total revenues are pretty stable in UK bus. But we'll watch that closely, and I would expect over time that the high fuel prices would create some movement as more people leave their cars at home and use public transport.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Alexei Dugania of Liberum Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jeff, Rachel, it's Peter Hyde, actually, rather than Alexia.
I thought the voice had sounded a bit deeper.
Yeah, deepened somewhat. A couple of questions, really. Just going back to student, you couldn't give us a bit of a feel for sort of half one, half two margins, could you? And sort of how the labour costs have changed, because I think one of the questions we're getting or thinking about is, well, how sudden was the kind of impact of route changes and labour cost increases, and that to me suggests that I just don't quite understand how these contracts are struck, because I must admit I kind of felt that the contracts were struck at the start of the year, you then ran the mileage and basically everything was bolted down, so therefore there wasn't as much variability around margins as you are now sort of suggesting. And then secondly, on Greyhound, I was just wondering if you could sort of talk a bit more about regional and whether, I think the Northeast was the problem before because of low fare competition, whether that's eased a lot and whether the Northeast has kind of bounced materially back into profit, or whether it's actually, you know, across all the different geographies where you're seeing sort of the benefits coming through, and whether the Northeast is still a problem, for instance.
Just on the Greyhound, I'll come back to Greyhound, but just to say that we've never said the Northeast wasn't profitable. We just said its growth rates were weaker than the rest of the territories. But I'll come back to Greyhound. In student, we reported 3.7% operating margins in the first half, which was down from 5.1% a year ago. In the second half, obviously, we start the new school year pretty much in September. And once we see how that new school year develops, you're quite right to say we should expect fairly stable costs and fairly stable margins. As we start the new school year, there is a lot of negotiation, discussion, potential changes as networks are established for individual towns and school boards. So each year as we start the operations, there is a discussion and an agreement as to the actual network mix that will be ran. And that can create variability in margin. That ought to settle down pretty quickly as we start the year. What we've seen this year is it's taken longer for that process to settle down as school boards, and it's not been one specific example, but there's been many examples across different school boards, but as they've looked to reduce their transportation costs as well as their overall education costs, and I'm sure you've read about teacher redundancies and the sort of pressures that they're facing. In fact, the article in the FT yesterday on Texas, I think, is an article that kind of sums up the pressures that various education authorities are under. It's taken, therefore, much longer this year for the actual final network to settle down and the route mix to be finalized. And sometimes parents get involved when routes are cut and they have to be added back, or there's certainly a lot of lobbying that goes on. We've, therefore, seen more variability this year, and really a lot of that has built up in terms of pressure on costs, which has started coming through in the quarter after the changes were put through. So we've really only started understanding the actual level of impact on our labour efficiency later than we probably should have. Now there's more actions that we can take to mitigate that, and labour isn't the only factor involved in terms of pushing our margins down. Despite our hedging, you know, we have seen some increase in fuel costs, and I think primarily due to the extreme cold that we've had in North America this year, we've seen increases in our engineering costs as well. But labour is probably the biggest factor. What we need to do is be more proactive going back and negotiating the final mix of routes and the type of routes that we run in school boards, and making sure we do a better job in the summer of next year to ensure that the efficiency of the network works to our advantage and that we can minimize our labor costs. And that means having driver hours basically driving for the highest percentage of hours and being paid at the full rate. So the type of the range of issue goes from anything from, as I mentioned before, midday routes being cut, which tend to be high margin, which were special kindergarten runs, to just general reductions in routes. And Seattle, for example, has just announced more route reductions as a consequence. In fact, the way they painted it is by cutting 80 school routes, they'd be able to save X number of teacher jobs. And so we need to be just a little bit more proactive to make sure that we understand the consequences of the route changes and that we better manage our labour costs to fit with the structure that we're asked to run. And it's a very important fact that we need to be able to flex our costs as we see these pressures coming to bear. And we just, in this fourth quarter, we just have not done a good enough job, quite frankly, flexing those costs. In terms of Greyhound, you asked about the Northeast. The Northeast is still lagging in terms of growth rate, but we've seen a general move up in terms of growth. In fact, the last few weeks have been very encouraging. But the fourth quarter was back to just under 1% growth from 2.5% down. And the Northeast is still lagging, but it's certainly shown an improvement versus where it was in the third quarter. So we've seen across the U.S. we've seen an improvement in growth in Greyhound, and it's quite encouraging. And it's the same phenomenon we saw in the summer of 2008, that as fuel triggers certain levels, more people decide to leave their cars at home and take Greyhound. More people find regional airlines ticketing too expensive and move back down to what is the most cost-effective form of travel, which is Greyhound.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, could I just ask a final question on tax? You've talked about 25% or less than 25% this year.
Yeah.
Do you think that's, I mean, should we think about that as sustainable for a year or two given the margin pressure at First Student, or do you think it's kind of less than 25% this year and then 25% thereafter?
No, I think we will see under 25% for the medium term, yeah.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Magnus Olsson of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everybody. It's Magnus Olsson of Morgan Stanley. Two questions. First, on the pricing. You talk about limited pricing opportunities, which seems fair given the environment. Is it also reflected in the wage inflation and the wage demands by the unions in mm-hmm. student bus?
Well, no, they're not volunteering to have limited pricing in their wage demands. I mean, that's a continual battle that we have. We negotiate wages on a school board by school board level, so it's done at a contract level. So there's no overall sort of trend, but. Overall wage inflation has been running at 2-3% in the US, and we have not, it's fair to say, we've not been recovering that in pricing through our customers. We mentioned pricing because we were saying our retention rates are improving this year relative to last year. I think we have a good program in place to ensure that we have a successful bidding season. But I think and many of the contract negotiations are open book, so you can go and look at the outputs from them. I think it's fair to say that where we've gained retention, we are having to give a little bit on pricing, and that's the key factor, along with the potential of further organic route losses, which leads us to conclude it's going to be difficult environment for margins next year. However, I think we are in a better place than we were this time last year.
That makes a lot of sense. And then on the quote in the press release that the company anticipates margin pressure to continue in the next financial year, with that, do you mean no improvement, or do you mean there's a risk that it will slip a bit further before you've got control over the labor efficiency and the pricing abates a little bit?
Well, I think it's still early in the bidding season. Mm. If you look at the percentage of contracts that have been completed for next year, it's still early in the cycle, and I think we have to see a little bit more evidence of that. The pressures that we're facing are pressures the whole industry is facing.
Absolutely.
I can see the same pressures on contracts that have been retained by our peers, where we have been in and we've tried to bid, then people across the industry are seeing these same pressures. But basically, I think it's just too early to flag any specific guidance on student margins. What we I think have tried to do as early as possible is to indicate that margin improvement will be extremely difficult.
Okay, very clear. And then finally, on contract retention, are there any very profitable contracts from, let's say, 5 years ago that are coming up for renewal, or is the mix not any different than in any other year?
No, last year was a more difficult year. We had a higher percentage of contracts coming up. This year, we're back down to our normal levels, which is about, I think, in the 25 to 30% of contract renewals, and that's all types of different contracts. It includes the percentage of that actually comes out to bid is relatively small, and it's no different, and no particular large ones which we should flag as a concern. No.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Damien Brewer of Royal Bank of Canada. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking the question. Two questions. First of all, could you just explain a bit more about the mechanics of why something that would happen, one presumes, in the first few weeks of the school year, i.e. sort of September and into October, takes so long to turn up in terms of sort of pricing and cost pressures, in terms of the quarter lag you're talking about? And then secondly, I'm just interested to know, in the current situation, obviously we've got these pressures on the business, as the fuel hedge begins to run out and term out, how do you think, or what will your strategy be for recovering increased fuel costs on contracts where you don't have pass-through in the business, particularly given the backdrop of still continued budgetary pressure on school boards?
Well, I mean, just in terms of the first question, it's a big business with a lot of moving parts. As I've said earlier, we probably should have been able to identify that earlier, but the reality is it's a significant scale of business, and the full impact of the labour costs weren't really identified until the results came through in January and then February. For example, as we have reduced the number of drivers, we've ended up with a more expensive mix with some of the older and more senior drivers who tend to be paid a little bit more. There's a whole range of events, and it tends to vary contract by contract. As I said before, there isn't a single example that you can point to with a common theme. The only common theme is school boards wishing to reduce their transportation costs. Now, the upside of that, the flip side of that coin is we continue to see more and more inquiries about people looking to contract out to the private sector. But as we've said before, that's a process which we'll talk about as we see more conversions, and we won't talk about that on the hope of more conversions. We'll actually talk about as we win conversions. So it's a big, complex business, but I think we track the costs very closely, and this was exacerbated by what was particularly bad weather in February, specifically in the Northeast, but across the U.S. In terms of fuel hedging, we have about 18 months of fuel hedging in place. We're at, as I said before, actually coming back to the question that we had before, I think in the third quarter update, our overall position was around 65% hedged. We're now sitting at around 70%, so we've increased by about 5%. That's across both the UK and North America. For student particularly, we have a higher level of hedging of our at-risk quantities. So I think, over the next 18 months, we will we have a relatively stable situation, and we will look at, we price that into our bids as all of our competition will have to price that into their bids as we go forward.
Okay, can I just come back? I'm just a little bit confused about why something that should impact the first few weeks of the school year doesn't turn up in terms of visibility of numbers in the business until the start of the quarter of this calendar year. Can you give us, in terms of some sort of idea of the timing or the build-up of these sort of network or route changes or just the sort of scheduling changes that have happened and obviously caused you disruption in the way you plan and schedule your labour and those overlaying costs with that. Can you give us a better feel of, you know, how that has built up, which months this has been at its peak, and whether you're beginning to see that settle down or whether that's still an ongoing process?
Yeah, that the key issue arose in... We started to see the issue in January. The key issue arose in February, and we've decided to bring this update forward as soon as we closed off the February period end. So I think that's fairly clear. In terms of the mechanics of it, it's something that develops over several periods. So I think we've been, fairly clear on that.
Okay, but, I mean, how can I put the question the other way? In terms of the momentum of the changes you're seeing in your networks, or rather your routes that you're operating, is that still building or is it beginning to settle down and lift?
No, I think it's settled down now. I think the next major period of change will be as we start up the new school year in September. As I said before, each year that we start up, we have a negotiation, we have a discussion about the optimum network. This year it took a particularly long time for those networks to settle down. I think they are pretty stable now. The key issue will become as school boards agree and sign off their new budgets for the next year, whether or not we see overall organic reductions in routes. And as I mentioned before, someone like Seattle has already announced they will be making a significant reduction in their routes. We've had Illinois make an announcement that they intend to reduce their student transportation costs quite significantly next year. So we do anticipate that there'll be more route consolidations next year, but I think the next round will be starting in the new school year.
Mm-hmm. And sorry, just one follow-on if I can grab another minute of your time. With the industry seeming to move to, with these changes, a slightly higher risk profile, will you seek to price that higher risk into your new bids going forward, or do you think competitive dynamics mean that's not possible?
Well, at the moment, I don't think it is possible. I think we've said that pricing is very keen at the moment in the current bid cycle. We need to focus on making sure that our bidding is optimized and that our cost base as we can get it. And I think, we've said there are still significant opportunities for us to improve our efficiency, and that's something we need to talk about more as we look to the full year results in May, in terms of what sort of targets that we can achieve to mitigate the top line pressures. But I don't think I'm not projecting that we will be able to gain much pricing improvement in our contracts overall on average next year.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Mark Manduca of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Rachel. In terms of the new school bidding season, if we just look at volumes, who or which competitors are taking market share on the volume side, and can we assume that that's at significantly lower rates of return given that you're holding back? A second point on the charter business, what was the run rate in February in terms of top line? And then in terms of, if we exclude labour issues, the ones that you discussed, mm-hmm. What's the rough average margin that you're getting on the new school bid contracts that are coming out, or a comparison maybe year on year?
Yeah, in terms of, let's say, volumes, what I can tell you is that I'm more optimistic that we'll maintain. We lost a little market share last year. I believe we'll be maintaining market share this year. I think our retention rates will improve. We've just had, a better program in terms of how we've approached the year. I think it's fair to say that new business won through share shift, i.e. in competitive bidding environment, is generally going at relatively low margins. So I think, the school boards are looking to optimize, as I said, optimize their savings. And I think that has forced some stability in the market in terms of the bidding from the bigger players that we're not seeing quite the some of the bidding that we saw last year, but some of the smaller players who are prepared to operate for cash in the short term are still bidding at margins which I would consider below our cost of capital, and we're resisting that, but as I said, with a focus on retention to make sure that we maintain our market share. I don't think you're going to see any huge volume swings. I know one or two players were talking about volume gains last year. I think you'll see less. I think, you know, people will understand that it's doesn't make any sense to bid at the type of margins needed to see big volume swings this year and market share gains, and therefore more sense will prevail in the market. In terms of charter, I think it's fair to say charter's stabilised. We're not seeing year-on-year declines that we had been seeing. Our challenge now is to get growth into the charter market. I believe, you know, we've talked about that before, that there is opportunity to grow our charter business by being more proactive, by being better sales and marketing managers, by incentivizing our contract managers in a better way to ensure that they care about charter and they're pushing the charter business to compensate for the difficulties in their principal school businesses. At the moment, we're not really seeing that growth. What we're seeing is a stability in the charter market, which is a step in the right direction. What we've now got to do is turn that around and show some growth.
And in terms of the organic top-line growth opportunity in charter, is it that being coupled at all with any margin pressure at all? So the existing contracts. So if we assume the existing contracts are running at maybe 22-23%.
On charter, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think school charter, for example, and charter splits into two sections, school charter and third-party charter. Certainly I can point to examples, for example, in New Jersey of school charter where margins have come under the same pressure as the regular student business.
Okay.
So it is being competitive, margins are being squeezed on school charter, and we are, but overall our charter business is stable now, and our challenge is now to take that from the stability we've achieved into a growth mode.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Gerald Koo of Arbuthnot Securities. Please go ahead.
Morning all. Another question on students. Who has the authority to authorise changes to routes or contracts after they were signed initially? Clearly there is going to be a little bit of local give and take. But given the fact that there appears to be, in aggregate, a fairly substantial financial impact, can you outline the sort of operational and financial controls that you have in place?
I don't think it works like that, Gerald. I don't think when we sign a contract, or when we agree a contract, we are not getting guarantees of specific route structures. They are something which are constantly negotiated, mostly at the start-up time in September or August for September. They're reviewed annually. They have the opportunity, school boards have the opportunity to review them mid-year, and, you know, they will design the network to meet their needs. So we don't have a point where the specific routes are approved or signed off. It just doesn't work like that. The contracts are structured in a way that we are providing a service based on the needs of the school board.
But surely your bid basis includes certain assumptions as to what you're going to, certain understandings as to what service in terms of number of buses, for example, you're going to be supplying.
Absolutely. I mean, we have to make, we will make assumptions based on what has historically been ran in a specific school board region. So we'll bid based on what we believe the route structure will look like. But there are no guarantees that that will be the route structure going forward. We can take into account any statements in terms of what the school board has said in terms of their intention to run in the bidding process, but we don't basically receive guarantees that that route structure will be in place for the rest of the contract. I think the key thing, Gerald, is we need to make sure that we can flex our cost base to effectively deliver a service on the contract, on the route structure that we are given. And I think we can do that better, which means being more being nimbler to achieve that. As the route structure, changes, we need to react to that to ensure that our cost base is flexed proportionately. But we don't generally have guarantees. There may be collars and caps in terms of if it goes under certain levels, then we have the right to at least go back into a discussion renegotiation. But there is no overall guarantees to specific routes or specific structures.
Right, so therefore this is something which can happen, has happened every year, it's just more severe this year.
Yes, correct.
And therefore it's something that in all likelihood is likely to recur going into next year if the customers remain under pressure.
Yes, correct. I think what we've talked about in the past during better economic times for the school boards is that as we start up new networks that we've been used to seeing something like a 1-2% organic growth as school boards add routes to take into account growing population, to take into account new developments and the expansion of the school district. What we've seen is contraction of routes this year, not necessarily in any specific general trend, but it may be combination of kindergarten routes with the main student routes. It may be the cancellation of special routes that were there for after school activities, or it may be the consolidation of normal routes. But we've seen a combination of all of those, which has been severe this year. And from what we're listening to the school boards, will be a trend that continues into next year. The example I mentioned earlier in Seattle was an announcement of around about a 5% cut in the total number of routes, which they've been forced into despite parent pressure. And they've used that as an example of how they're going to save money to not lay off teachers. That's the choices that these school boards are facing. That's where they're at.
On the other side, what flexibility, if any, do you have to withdraw from contracts where the contractual changes, where the route changes are too great? You said there are some sort of renegotiation triggers. Is that universal, or are there going to be situations where you say have a 3-year contract, and then a year or 2 years in, circumstances change and the customer decides to pull 10-15% of what you were expecting?
Well, I think it's probably unusual for us to walk away from contracts. I mean, we do have, and each contract is different. There is no standard sort of contract with the school boards, but there are certain clauses in the contract that give certain criteria for renegotiation. I'm not sure how many of them give you the right to walk away, but clearly, it's our job to make sure that we can operate efficiently under those contracts, and I think we need to focus in that, really.
Okay, thanks very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Douglas McNeil of Charles Stanley Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just to turn away from the US for a moment, could I ask about UK Rail and what lies ahead there? I think the DfT has said that it's talking to you about extending the TransPennine franchise, and since we're so close to the date on which it would otherwise expire, is it safe to assume that an extension is in the pipeline there? And then secondly, can you say whether you have put in pre-qualification bids for West Coast or East Anglia?
Yeah, I think the department has said that on TransPennine, I think it's difficult for me to talk in any more detail than just leave it at that. You know, you'd have to draw your own conclusions in terms of the timing, but the TransPennine specifically, I think, is due for renegotiation in February 2012. So clearly, you know, we are up against, or the department would be up against time, but they have come out and stated that they're talking to us. And I think you've seen, you know, they have various options, and I think you've seen that in other franchises recently. In terms of the rest of the business, you know, we are involved in the West Coast process. I think there's due to be an announcement on pre-qualification for that relatively shortly. And I think the only other, you know, we decided to pass on the Anglia process at this stage and focus on West Coast. And I think the only other, you know, the key areas, as we said before, is we have our option on First Great Western, which we'll have to make a decision on, you know, relatively shortly.
Okay, thanks very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Joe Spooner of RBS. Please go ahead.
Hi there, morning guys. Does the outlook that you're now kind of talking about for student kind of temper your view on the ability to make further progress in terms of the net debt position of the group or the pace of progress that you kind of previously alluded to there? And secondly, I think earlier in the call you spoke about a half percentage point margin impact from the weather. Was that in the second half alone or over the full year? Because I think you've been talking about full year margins elsewhere.
No, that's the impact on full year margin.
Okay.
So obviously it's a bit higher on the second half. Sorry, what was the...
I think you maintain debt reduction.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the issue is the pace of change. We will certainly continue to reduce debt, and we will certainly continue to reduce leverage. I think the question is, what is the pace of that reduction? And obviously, you know, in terms of the leverage, it's obviously linked to the strength of the EBITDA. You know, we will certainly continue to reduce leverage in 2011-12. I think it's a reasonable assumption to say that the reduction may be a little lower than might previously have been.
And in terms of the way you're thinking about the dividend, obviously you kind of spoke in this statement of 7 percentage points as before, but is that the medium-term target is maintained in that way as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, the group has a lot of strength in terms of cash generation, and I think we can maintain those balances between investing in capital, investing in growth, debt reduction, and growing the dividend. I mean, clearly, you know, students an important factor in that, but it is continued to show, you know, strong cash generation. We're making very good progress on working capital and student. We continue to be very precise and about our capital expenditure, ensuring that we utilize our school buses to the maximum. And student continues to generate strong cash flows for the group. But I think, you know, you're right to identify that the pace of that deleveraging may be affected.
Thanks very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Damien Brewer of Royal Bank of Canada. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning again. Just one follow-on question. I just want to step away from the sort of short-term focus on margin, etc. And just, obviously, there's another side to the business, which is the capital employed in the student bus business in America. Could you give us any flavour of whether you're able to do anything sort of more proactively by taking capital out of the business? And by that, I mean either sort of operating fleets for a longer period, aging vehicles, using second-hand vehicles, which would still give you a very decent return on capital whilst able to accommodate lower costs in the school boards. And if you are doing that, can
can you give us an idea of sort of how much headroom or how much of the fleet you think you could be proactive on this with?
No, I think you know, it's obviously it's something we look at, and it's something we put into the negotiations, and but it, I wouldn't say there was a, you know, we have over the last couple of years seen very good results in terms, and we've talked about very good results in terms of how we are becoming better at cascading our vehicles and using our vehicles more efficiently. So if we lose a contract, making sure that those vehicles are cascaded to other contracts. That's been the biggest area that we've been able to allocate vehicles to make sure that we maintain a lower cost of capital, to make sure that we reduce our capital expenditure commitments proportionately to the generation of earnings in, from the student business. And that's a key area that I think will be we need to focus on for the next year. There are negotiations with school boards that says, look, just let us age the fleet and we can all share in that type of reduction in terms of rates. And I wouldn't say we've had no success there, but I don't think it's been significant.
Okay, that's almost surprising given the pressures on the school boards in other parts of the US.
Well, I think the US economy is relatively surprising. I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's our job to educate the school boards, the commercial realities, but we still get a lot of requests for new buses. Last year we had a lot of competition bidding with new buses, even when they weren't, you know, weren't requested in the bids, and using capital as a way of sort of winning market share. Now, we're trying to educate the school boards that, you know, a bus fleet which the school board might ask that is replaced after 10 years could be extended to 14 years. So we are going through that process. What I'm saying is that we haven't had a significant gain in that at this stage. I think this year the commercial reality of the budget positions is a lot harsher than it probably was in the last couple of years, where there was federal funding available to offset some of the budget deficits. The federal funding isn't there this year, and school boards are having to react to that, and we may see more movement in that particular area. We'll certainly continue to push for it to ensure that we do everything to minimize the capital investment into that business, or to make sure it's appropriate for the returns that we get from the business.
Okay, fascinating. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of John Lawson of Investec. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Jeff. Good morning, Rachel. Just a couple of questions, really. One a bit follows on the debt reduction profile. I just wondered whether you're going to give us a new update of a target of net debt to EBITDA, obviously, at the prelim stage, obviously 2.5 for this year. But perhaps linked to that, could you be thinking of perhaps selling some of your activities, and I don't mean sort of whole divisions, but parts of the business perhaps to accelerate that progress? And the second question relates to perhaps the student. I just wonder whether you see any trends for school boards starting to think more and more about perhaps charging more for their services. I know one or two do, but just wondered whether that might become an increasing trend.
I think it might become an increasing trend. I wouldn't say that it's something which has got any significant momentum at the moment, but I think it's something that we need to be thinking about for the future. It's certainly a question for the longer term. As I said, I don't think there's any real significant momentum in it at the moment. I think in terms of debt reduction, we'll give targets in May. I think that's the time I feel comfortable giving specific guidance probably for the next financial year, both in terms of earnings and in terms of debt reduction. But I will say that I think the direction of the deleveraging will continue. We'll continue to make a positive movement. The question is obviously the pace, and I think we have to be flexible on that. We've talked about getting down to around 2x net debt to EBITDA. This year we've made good progress, and I think we can continue to make some progress. The question is the pace of that, and we'll talk about that in more detail then. In terms of selling assets, that's something we've discussed and something we've been open to, and obviously the GB Rail Freight was a step in that direction. I wouldn't obviously want to talk about specific targets, but we have talked about smaller non-core assets, and there are several of those in the group. Obviously we'll do it at the right price. This is not we don't have to push that process at any cost, so we'll look for good prices, but it's certainly an option. And we've also talked about property disposals in North America. We have a strong property portfolio, especially from the Greyhound brand. As we go through our Greyhound transformation project, some of the bigger terminals, which were designed for the 1960s, don't necessarily fit with the current network structure, and we can look to continue to dispose of property, or opportunities to dispose of properties as the property market bounces back, which we are seeing some evidence that it is in North America. So we will look at all of those options and continue to the good progress that we've been making on getting the debt down to levels which we're more comfortable with. Are there any more questions?
We have no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate you all joining the call, and we will update you in more detail on the results, obviously, in May. Thank you very much.
This now concludes our call. Thank you for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.